Glenn sounds like.
Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey.
All right.
It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, I'm Dr. Lisa. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Billy, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, so listen, folks. This is like when I'm on vacation in Las Vegas. I am actually looking out my window at Caesar's Palace right now from the 17th floor of my hotel. So today's going to be a particularly special day because another one of our hosts who has two shows here, Billy Crosby, has agreed to be my guest. Hey, Billy.
That? Hey, Lisa. Hey, Dr. Lisa. How are you?
Good, good.
Wow.
So this is so funny because you're in the studio and I'm in Las Vegas. Are you jealous? Are you thinking,
yes,
you're a little, come on.
I would love to be in Las Vegas right now.
You could be in Las Vegas with my husband and in this hotel and he'd probably be a lot happier than he is now being stuck with me.
So, well, I don't know.
He left. He's like, you're doing a radio show. I'm going to the pool.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he has his headphones. He heard me.
He heard that. I was going to be another show later.
He's still here. Anyway, this is going to be hilarious. And I'm really glad because, you know, Billy, listen, folks, I'm talking to you listeners in your basements at home. Billy's a great guy and he's got such a positive, friendly. He's also kind of in my age group. I really like Billy a lot. And, you know, we don't get to really know each other that much. And so we're going to find out, what's inside Billy's head. And I think it's going to be, so we're all going to get to know him together, better. And he has two really fabulous radio, not just one show, guys. He's got two. This guy's ambitious. So, yes. Billy, tell us about your two radio shows and everything so that we know what you're doing over at Radio Free Brooklyn.
Okay, I have I just finished an hour ago. I have the Thursday morning at 11 o'clock show. It's called the Attitude Adjustment Hour. And kind of the basis for that was I'm always thinking about that time before lunchtime and right before you go into the afternoon where a lot of people may be studying or cleaning the house or feeding the kids or something like that. And just wanted to have some kind of music to go along with that, kind of a soundtrack to go with that. Mostly up-tempo stuff that you could, you know, when you're vacuuming and, you know, and the Rolling Stones are on, you know, the vacuuming's a little easier, you know?
Yeah. Wow, you have such a positive view of people that you think they're vacuuming, but I like that.
Well, I mean, I try to imagine what I'd be doing if I was at home.
Is that what you'd be doing, vacuuming?
Yeah, I'd either be cleaning or laying down. You know?
Wow, we are getting to know you. So tell us about your other show. And what time? Oh, it's 11 o'clock on Thursday.
11 to,
and I know that because I see you right when I come in.
Yes.
So every week. So what about your other show?
Now, the other show is Sunday night at 11 o'clock p.m. I have this thing with 11s, I guess. And 11 to 1 on Sunday night is called Cosmic Debris. And that was that was the first show that I had here on Radio Free Brooklyn, and it's named after a Frank Zappa song.
Ah.
Yes. You know, look here, brother, who you driving with that cosmic debris, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
My brother and I, when we were kids, we had a hamster named Billy the Pimp. a fish. Oh, wait, what was this? Was it Billy? Or am I...
Yeah, the Frank Zappa song is called Willie the Pimp. Yeah.
Willie the Pimp. Yeah. Right. I'm getting confused because Billy, Willie the Pimp. A goldfish. Our hamster was named Fang, and our goldfish was Willie the Pimp.
Nice.
So I hear you. That's awesome. And what kind of music?
Well, Cosmic Debris is a little darker. It can be up tempo at times, but a lot of times, let's say for instance, Attitude Adjustment Show would be like the Beatles, right? And Cosmic Debris would be like Leonard Cohen. You know, so it's a little spacier, a little darker. There's more, I put more, not just music, but I'll put in maybe some poetry or some people speaking about something. You know, I'll mix it up a little more like that. But it's kind of like a, more like a theater piece than a, you know, than just a straight radio show.
Billy, you do 3 hours of programming a week. That's incredible. I can barely make it through one. Look at me.
I love the radio.
I can barely make it through this. You're incredible.
I love the radio. That's my thing.
You do. You do. You know what? Before we really get into our interview, I want to push the Miss Subways pack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Miss because Subway. So can I just want to tell everybody about that.
Absolutely.
So you know I'm Miss Subways,
yes.
Right?
Yes, you are.
Billy, you know I'm Miss Subways. I won it because I told everybody that I thought it was time a post-menopausal woman became Miss Subways.
And it is time, yes.
I think it's time. So, but they actually, the you know, I've done it a whole year. It's been a blast. Mm. I'm sick of my red dress, frankly. I really
You have to wear the red dress?
I have to wear this red. I mean, I made it happen. In other words, like I made the rule myself that I have to wear the same red dress every time, like long gown. It's probably just because I'm too lazy or cheap to buy another to like have a whole wardrobe. But that's my Miss Subway look. And but anyway, so on Thursday, a week from today, Billy, they're having the next Miss Subways pageant for at Littlefield, which is in Gowanus. And you can go to littlefieldnyc.com to get tickets. Mm. And it starts at 7:30.
Okay.
And it's at, so here's the address. It's 635 Sackett Street.
Okay.
I think, and anyway, you can also go to my Facebook page, but you should come. I mean, Billy, you should come, but everybody should come.
I definitely want to come. I definitely do.
I think it's going to be so much fun. It was crazy last year. They had a great talent contest. It's like, you know, trans people and children and old people and dogs and animals, and like just craziness. Absolute craziness.
Are they choosing Miss Subways that night or did they?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to give up my responsibilities to the next person. They're going to have to deal with the L train.
Are you sad about that?
I don't know. Good luck to them. That's all I can say. I had an easy reign. But anyway, so before we get started, I just want to give people, let's find out more about you. So this is what I wanted to know. I wanted to know, can you tell us one of either the most or one of your traumatic childhood experiences?
Oh yeah.
That has really stuck with you.
Oh yeah. Still to this day, which is kind of weird. When I was a kid, my dad, he was cheap. He didn't want to buy anything, you know, no allowance, no anything like that.
Wow.
But one day he bought, for some reason, I think a rock fell on his head or something. And he bought me a watch, and it was a time.
Wow, how old were you?
Oh, let's say I'm gonna think 14.
Okay.
Right. So he bought me a watch. It might have been younger than that, but it feels like it was 14. He bought me the watch, and it was a Timex. I don't know how many people remember Timex watches. You know.
Well, I sure do.
Yeah, and takes a licking and keeps on ticking. You know.
Oh,
all of that.
Yeah, right.
Remember that? And but it had this thing called the Flexi Band. Which meant that you were able to pull the band out like a rubber band, and it would snap back on your wrist.
I remember those.
Remember those?
I remember those.
Yes.
I love those.
Yeah, those. I thought it was great. I mean, I was always skeptical about stuff because I never really had anything, so my biggest fear was losing things.
Ah.
You know, so because I never had it, so my whole thing was like, now I have to focus all my attention on this watch. And make sure that, because I know.
Oh,
my,
you mean the responsibility of owning the watch?
Yes,
it got to you.
Yes, and I had to watch that because, like I said, I never had anything, and if anything bad happened to this watch, that meant I would never get anything again ever in life. But anyway, wow. my sister said, she said, oh, this is the Flexi watch. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So she pulls the band as far back as she can, but it doesn't snap back all the way.
Wow.
Like it doesn't snap back into the tight fit that it was.
Right, right, right.
You know?
She broke it.
But I thought, well, okay, you know, I mean, we can work around this.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, the next day I went to school, I believe it was the winter time, and I remember taking my sweater off, and I didn't notice it at the time, but then when I took my sweater off, the watch came off, too.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but remember, because I'm not used to wearing a watch, so I didn't notice that it was gone until I got home. And then when I got home, I was like, oh my God, where's the watch? Oh, I'm freaking out, right? Because my dad, he was a pretty mean guy. But anyway, but I'm thinking maybe he won't say anything. He'll just say, you know, I bummed the watch, big deal, and I won't say anything about it. So of course, when he comes in, the first thing he goes, hey, Bill, how's that watch doing?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so now I'm having a heart attack, right?
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, yeah, it's all right, it's all right. He goes, oh, let's see it.
Oh, no.
And I'm going, oh, my God. So I'm sitting in my room. I'm shaking like a leaf.
Oh, my God.
Because I know this is it. And, you know, you hear the boom, boom, boom coming up the stairs.
Right.
And he's standing in my doorway, and he goes, oh, yeah, let's see that watch. And I have the sad face on now. He goes, what's going on? I said, I lost it. And he goes, you did not lose this watch. And I said, yeah, I lost it. I don't know what happened. Maybe when I took my sweater off, maybe it fell off, or blah, blah. He goes, you did not lose this watch. I go, I swear I lost it. He goes, stop lying to me. He said, if you tell the truth, everything will be fine.
Oh, my God.
So you kind of see where this is going, right? And I said, I lost the watch. He goes, don't lie to me. I know one of those boys at school took it from you. And I'm sitting there. So here's, you know, little preteen teen boy.
Yeah.
At a crossroads that he doesn't deserve to be at. Right.
Right.
And he's gone. So I know somebody took it, and I'm going, no, I lost it. He goes, don't lie to me. Somebody took that watch from you. So I just gave up. I said, yeah, somebody took it from me. I'm sorry. Because, see, that was much better.
Oh, my God.
So I'm sitting here thinking, God, what happened to the truth is good, you know? But here's where it twisted. After dinner, he comes up. He goes, so tomorrow we're going to go to school and you're going to show me the boy that stole your watch. So I'm like, now I'm thinking, eh. So I'm hoping that sometimes he forgets things. Sometimes he has to go to work early, blah, 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 blah. But he was there bright and early, and I'm there, and he drove me to school, and we're standing out in front of the school, and he's, I want you to show me the kid that stole your watch. And I'm just like flipping out. I'm flipping. And I'm going, oh, I don't see him. So he smacks me in the back of the head.
Really?
Yeah. Like in front of, you know, getting beat in, you know, in front of everybody is like the worst humiliation of all time.
And he like really hit you hard.
I mean, he really hit me. Like, who is the guy?
Oh, my God.
So I'm sitting there and.
Oh, my God.
So here's where it twists again. So I picked some guy out. I just randomly pointed at somebody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Because I was like,
yeah, I could see how that happened.
Yeah. Because I'm like done, you know? And, so he gets the principal, they grab the kid. So me and this kid, who I don't know him, he doesn't know me. They take us to the principal's office. The principal calls that guy's dad. Now that guy's dad comes to the school.
Holy shit.
Right. And him and my dad are having an argument in the principal's office.
Holy shit.
I'm sitting there.
And what's the other kid doing?
The other kid's looking at me like, are you kidding me?
he's like really mad at you, right?
Yeah.
He's mad at you or confused?
No, he's confused. He has no idea what's going on here. You know,
okay.
He's like, who are you? Why you? What? Why yeah, like, you picked me?
Okay,
I didn't do anything to you. So they're arguing. So as it turns out, my dad, and this is indicative of who my father was, my dad made the kid's dad write him a check for the watch.
Get out! Yes. Your dad is amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
are you kidding me?
For real. He made him
he
write.
He gave your dad a check.
Yes, my dad told him you're gonna pay for my son's watch. Now, in the meantime, you know, there was no stolen anything. It's just me trying to self preserve myself. Now is all that was going on, right? And so he did it. The guy's dad came out with the kid and said, "Hey, son, don't worry about it. Ain't no big deal." You know, he was like really nice to his kid about it. My dad looked at me and goes, "Remind me not to ever do anything for you again, ever."
Aww.
And left me sitting in that office, right?
Aww.
So I'm sitting there in the office. I'm like, you know, I want to die because I just thought this is just so awful. But I thought, well, at least this is done now.
Right.
But you know, junior high school, everybody talks. Everybody,
right?
So when I came back, when I came back to school the next day, nobody spoke to me.
That's
the way the rest of junior high school was. Nobody spoke to me.
Everybody
was kind of like, and whenever there was any kind of acknowledgement, and this was from teachers as well, when it was any kind of acknowledgement, it was kind of, you know, the thing where people shake their head like, you know, like you're pathetic.
You right. Know? No, how horrible. And did your dad have any idea about what happened at school or what he had caused the trauma?
That
is traumatic. Are you kidding?
He found out years later. I told him.
No wonder you wound up at Radio Free Brooklyn with all the other nutcases like me.
Yeah,
I get it.
Way later when I was, I think I was I must have been in my 30s when I finally, I don't know how it came up, but somehow I was talking to him on the phone one day and I told him about it and everything. And there was just silence. He didn't even say, "I'm sorry," you know?
He sounds very, very painful to grow up with.
Yeah, it was very painful. But then, you know, what the weird thing is that then in retrospect, I find out about how he grew up.
Yeah. Right?
And then it starts to make sense why he was the way he was.
Really? How did he grow up?
Well,
enlightened. Yeah, it's a very enlightened point to make.
It was weird.
I think.
Yeah, he was born in South Carolina, and he ran away from home when he was 14. He just said, "Screw these people! I hate everyone."
I just want to watch. I'm just going to go out there. I'm 14. I want my watch now.
Yeah, really.
Not funny. This is not funny at all.
Yeah.
So he lived in South Carolina.
Yeah, he ran away from home. Yeah, he met my mom. Yeah, he met my mom there in South Carolina. They both met, and then they both came to New York, where he changed his last name.
Really?
Yes.
Well, what was it before?
It was Thompson before.
Thompson?
Yes.
Why did he change his name? Did he not want his folks to find him?
He just wanted to be his own guy. He didn't want to have no connection to anybody. So he changed.
But he came to New York City at age 14 with his girlfriend from North Carolina?
No. I mean, he met my mom there. They came up a little later. I mean, they were a little older when they got up here. But that's what he did when he got here. He got up here.
She came later.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah. And then changed his name. And then, and I didn't think much of the name change until, we were at a family picnic and everybody had the same last name except us.
Really? How old were you at that time?
Maybe we're in the 20s. Maybe we're in the late 20s. Now.
Did you ever like wonder where your grandparents were or anything like that?
Well, I mean, I met my grandmother on his side once. And a grandma on my mother's side, I've met a couple of times. I had visited her in Beaufort, South Carolina, and it was really, it's really gorgeous there. And but I was so wrapped up in and wound up so tightly that I really couldn't appreciate, you know, having a grandma and being in a beautiful place. And I was just so messed up for a long time that I missed a lot of what actually makes life so wonderful, because I was just so afraid and fear, you know, fearful and
I can imagine.
And angry.
I can imagine.
You know, I
can imagine.
I missed a lot of stuff.
So, so did you, so your parents, did they stay married?
Yeah, they, it's funny about people of that generation is that they weren't, after a while, after the kids grew up, I have a brother and two sisters, all younger. And after we all got pretty much grown up, you know, mom decided that's that. I'm out. You know, her thing
she
was
had enough.
Yeah, her thing was like, I'm going to just make sure the kids are okay and that they can take care of themselves, and then I'm leaving. So she did. They never got divorced, right? She just moved out. You know?
Were you surprised, or you're like, oh, that makes sense?
Well, I was shocked she lasted as long as she did. That she stayed there that long.
So what was your family like growing up? Like you, so you were the oldest of four.
Yes.
And your dad sounds like he was a pretty abusive guy.
Yeah, he was. He was abusive. I used to take all the. I used to take the punishment for my brothers and sisters whenever stuff used to happen.
You were protective of them.
Yeah, I used to always go, it was me, I did it. I did it.
And, wow.
Yeah, I did that a lot.
So so what was your dad like? What did he do? Did he,
My dad, he worked at a place called General Aerosmith, Aerospace Materials, and I think they made parts for airplanes. It was a great job. I mean, he had a great job, great union, made money. He used to wear, he worked in the factory, but he used to wear a suit to work every day.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean he wasn't a factory worker?
No, he wasn't.
He didn't work on the line or anything?
No, he did he did work on the line, but he always wore a suit to work and would change into his work clothes at work. And then when he was done, he would change back into the suit. He used to always have this thing about, he's like that, what was that ZZ Top song, Every Girl Crazy About the Sharp-Dressed Man?
he was a sharp dresser.
He was a sharp
dresser. He also sounded like he took a lot of pride in who he was and
absolutely
himself.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's cool, right?
Oh, I thought it was a great thing, you know. Of course I rebelled strongly against it because I didn't like him or understand it at the time. But he used to say this thing like, why do you wear a suit to work every day? He goes, well, just because I work like a horse doesn't mean I have to look like a horse.
Wow. Well, those are good lessons.
I think it was outstanding, you know, but it kicked my rebellion because, you know, I didn't want to be like him, you know?
Sure, of course. So how he was abusive, how did that come out?
Well, I mean, that was just about, I think, a lot of his issues. And I think have a feeling that's how he came up, you know, that he probably got beat a lot by his parents. So, you know, so after a while, when I got to be a certain age, he just realized that it just wasn't working. You know?
Right. So was he abusive to your mom? Did he yell? Did he scream?
Yes, he was.
What happened?
He was very abusive to my mom, and he hit her all the time and stuff like that, and he was always verbally.
Really?
Yeah, and he was verbally abusive, and until one day, my brother, who was 2 years younger than me, sprouted up like an oak tree and put an end to that.
What did he do? My brother
ended up being bigger than everybody in the house. So he came in one day during some of that stuff and told my dad he would end his life if he ever did that again.
You mostly saw him hitting your mom.
My mom.
He didn't hit you guys.
He hit me. Well, I was the one who
hit you.
Yeah, I was the one who got beat, but he didn't. And my sister, who's younger than me, 1 year younger than me, was a wildcat. So he couldn't.
Like, what do you mean? Like
she would fight him. If he tried to beat her, she would fight him. So it just became too much for him to try to discipline her.
You had a lot of violence in your house.
Yeah, a lot of.
Did people get hurt? I mean, was it just a smack, or did anyone ever really get hurt?
No, there was not like real hospital injury or anything like that.
But was there yelling and screaming?
Oh yeah, there was a lot. It was a lot of yelling and screaming. There was a lot of the verbal abuse. Actually, you know, is the thing that sticks with you more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, that's because that gets in your head.
I've had some verbal abuse in my day from my Jewish mother, believe you me.
Yes.
But, I mean...
Once that stuff gets in your head, it messes with you for a long time.
Yeah, you're worthless. Worthless.
Mm. That was kind of it.
It's really, really terrible.
Yeah, that was kind of it. We got the, you're going to end up dead or in jail speech too many times.
Right. Yeah. So when you were rebellious in high school, what did that look like?
Well, I really didn't come
into... Rebellious against him or rebellious in general?
Just rebellious in general. But it was a quiet rebellion. I think the only person who knew I was rebelling was me. And until I got into college.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened?
And then when I got into college... it became chasing white girls.
Oh, you like the white girls? Yeah.
In fact,
so how did that go out? Go. Oh, I mean, in case anyone can't tell, Billy is an African American. If you didn't know, okay, we just put that out there. So what happened? So because it is really funny. Like, you know, you probably. I'm guessing you didn't fit the stereotype of
I was really, really, really quiet, really reserved, you know, wasn't really outgoing or anything. And for me, it was like the first person that paid attention to me was this pretty girl, you know, who actually
pretty white girl,
pretty white Jewish girl.
Oh,
yes.
See?
Her name was Ivy.
We could have hooked up in high school.
Yeah,
you're just 2 years older than me.
There we go.
You're good looking. I'm sure we could have hooked up.
Yeah, no doubt.
Definitely.
No doubt about it.
Not now, but, you know, I'm married and everything. You can talk to Phil about it. Phil's probably so ready to get rid of me, especially after this vacation. But.
So that was her name was Ivy.
Ivy. Was it Ivy Koplowitz or something really Jewy?
Yeah, it was Ivy Rozovsky.
Rozovsky?
Yes.
Wow.
So I think she was Russian.
So that
Jewish.
Must have been really rough. So you had a white girlfriend in high school?
Yeah, it was weird.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, because I didn't, like I said, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, I mean, this is, and when I got into college, that's where I met Ivy, was in college. But
in college.
I was
still,
and I
what
was,
year was it?
And
it was
I was
1970 or something, like 72.
I'm gonna say like 73, 74.
That's like so that. Radical, right? Yeah.
But you know what's weird? I was still a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. You know? That's sweet. I like
you know?
That.
So that was my first time, and I didn't know what was going on. I was just like, I had no clue. And thank God she knew what she was doing.
Yeah, well,
it could have been
Jewish
a mess.
Girls, what do you
expect? I didn't know nothing about any of this stuff.
I had my first sexual experience at age 14 or 15. There you go.
Yeah,
that was great. You're so lucky. You got
My thing was that I was so lucky. I got somebody who wasn't as messed up as I was.
Did you have a good that's good. Do you had a good relationship with her?
Yeah, we were all the way through college and
Oh, nice.
So it was nice. So it was a 2-year school, but I went there, they kicked me out. I went back. Yeah, I got kicked out because they did this very odd thing, you know, when you go to high school, they give you a schedule card of where you're supposed to be. And in college, they give you a blank card and tell you to walk around and take the classes you need to take. And I thought, I'm so undisciplined right now. I don't even know what to do. You know, so I didn't know where to go. I mean, I had a little booklet that said you should take this and build up your...
I got screwed up at that, too. Yeah. I lost all my cards.
I didn't know what to do. So
you just didn't know how to manage it.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do. It was the first time, actually, I was on my own, unsupervised.
Right, and they don't give you any guidance.
Yeah, they don't really tell you.
You need a little guidance.
That's all. You just need somebody to stand next to you and go, hey, you know what, maybe... Make sure you get this amount of electives and make sure you take this kind of a class and da da da.
Okay, well, I'm going to blame the school on that.
Yeah, I blame the school.
That wasn't your intention.
No, I wasn't trying to like not go. I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah. So what was it like having a white girlfriend in those days? Did your parents meet her or did you meet her parents?
I never met her. You know, she had her own place.
How was that?
I don't know. Or else it was her parents' house and they were never around. I never met her parents.
Where was it?
This was in Bayside, Queens.
And so she lived in Bayside,
yes.
In her own place.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So you didn't know where her parents were, though?
I never asked about it. I just was so...
That's so weird that you dated her for years and
I was,
you never said, hey...
I was so excited that somebody actually liked me that I didn't actually care about anything else.
You're like, I'm just going to go with this. I don't want to open this up.
Yeah, I don't want to start any trouble. I don't want anybody to say anything that might change my mind or.
But isn't it weird that like her parents, I mean, at that age, her parents never became part of the picture. Come on, Billy.
Yeah,
I think
it is weird, but I could tell you.
That's the way it went.
When I lived in Hollis, Queens, I lived down the street from somebody who was very famous whose parents were never around, you know?
Oh, yeah, right, because maybe that was normal.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That was normal. I got it.
Yeah, it seemed like a...
So, did your parents meet her?
No, they never met her.
Did they know that you were dating a white girl?
Yes, they did.
And did they care, or was there comments on it?
My dad was from the go out and... pardon my language, go out and fuck every girl you can school.
Your dad was like that?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Your dad sounds horrible.
Yeah, and I had two sisters.
Oh, my God.
So,
did they say?
Well, you know what he told them? He said, watch out for these dudes. The only thing they're trying to do is get in your pants. So he's telling them that.
I mean, that's good. At least he was like that.
Yeah, at least he was like that. But he's right down the hall telling the two boys, go out and get all you can, you know?
I love this guy. He's really fucked up.
Yeah, really, really messed up. No, he is messed up. No doubt about it.
So what about at school? Was it weird or was
in those days, it didn't seem to be a problem at all.
Did people comment on it?
No, it seemed to be really, really open about it. There were a lot of mixed couples and, you know, of all different types, you know, so it didn't stand out.
It felt comfortable. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it was kind of nice.
Know, my best friend in her 20s had a black boyfriend, and she was a white Jew, and like me. And she said, like, I mean, you know, whatever. We never thought about it because, you know, in New York, but then, like, if they went to, like, a trip somewhere else, they would get funny looks or something.
Oh yeah, outside
like that.
New York was always like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dated a girl
in
Binghamton.
Yeah, no one ever thought about it.
I mean, I dated a girl in Binghamton once, and it was like that. It was just like, I mean, as great as New York is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy, you know, to all types of people and all types of situations, and then you leave, and you just go maybe 10 miles out of New York, and it becomes a different world. And you know when you're not used to it, you're like, what's wrong with you?
Billy, it's like the half hour. We have to do the station ID, right?
Okay.
Do you want to do it? I'm just going to say thanks for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit every Thursday, 2 to 3 at Twitter and all that stuff at Dr. Lisa Levy SP. There, I did my part. Do you want to talk about the station?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, hey, thanks everybody for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. We are live from our beautiful station in Bushwick and worldwide, probably at radiofreebrooklyn.org.
Tell them to download the apps.
Yes, don't forget, folks, that we have a free iPhone app and we have a free Android app, so you don't have to stay in one place to listen to Radio Free Brooklyn, and you can get them either from the App Store or you can get them from Google Play. And so if you went to the iPhone app, you go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android. And that'll take you right to the installation page. You click on install and voila, you have Radio Free Brooklyn wherever you go. And
I love it. Good job. So, you know what? So I want to ask you about how you got into radio and then we'll talk about your painting. So okay. So how, you know, obviously you're a music lover, radio,
Absolutely.
How did you get into that?
When I was a kid, I was one of those kids that slept with the transistor under the pillow at night.
It was
something just very romantic about the radio late at night when everybody was sleeping.
Uh-huh. And did you feel like it was kind of an escape from the craziness going on?
It was an escape, and it was part of my little world that I built for myself. And I wanted to do it. I said, I want to do that. I said, I can do that. I don't know where I got that from. I was never confident about anything, but I was confident that I could do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I did that. So I used to, remember walkie-talkies?
Sure.
I used to broadcast to my mom in the kitchen.
Are you kidding? You know, that's hilarious. How did you do that?
Well, I put one walkie-talkie in the kitchen. That was the receiving one, right? So when she was in there cooking. And the one that I had, I would just tape the handle down so that she could hear me talk. And I would just hold it over the record player, and I would announce records and do the weather. And
in those days,
I was.
So your mom must have been really proud of you. That's pretty cool. Was your mom like kind of sweet?
My mom was the sweetest ever. Yes, she's very, very, very sweet. So I was a top 40 guy because that's what was going on. You know, that was when WABC. Remember? And so I was
yeah,
like,
of course.
I was like, hey, all our listeners out there in Hollis, Queens, we got the Temptations for you on WABC. You know, I was like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
I did that, and then I thought, okay, I had no idea how do you get in it, da-da-da, nothing like that. And so I would just be that until I got to college. And when I got to college, I remember sitting in the cafeteria, you know, feeling bad about myself again. This was before I met Ivy. And I heard what sounded like a radio station broadcasting over the speakers. And I ran up to one of the lunch ladies and I go, where's this music come from? She goes, oh, it's the radio station. It's in the Oakland building right up there. And I tell you, Jesse Owens would have had nothing on me that day. I like a bat out of hell, I ran up to that building, ran up. And now here I am, the only thing that I cared about, and I'm standing right outside the door, and it says WQCC, and I'm standing.
So you started doing radio in college, obviously.
Yeah, but you know what? They didn't let me on at first. I knocked on the door, I walked in, and the guy was like, yeah, blah, 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 you know, you're a freshman, you have to be a sophomore before you can do it, but you can hang around if you want and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I, of course I hung around because since I hadn't registered for any classes, I had lots of time, you know? So, I'm there one afternoon and one of the guys that's getting ready to go on the air, it's like, oh yeah. So you know, what kind of music are you into? I go, I'm into a lot of music, and he has a stack of records. So I said, let's see what you got. And for each record, here's the weird part. For each record, for each album he pulled, I told him what track he was going to play. I guessed which track he was going to play on each one of those albums.
That's like really talent. That's real talent.
And he was like shocked.
Oh, you really impressed him.
Yeah, he's like, how did you? I said, yeah. I mean, I listened to the radio, and this was, I mean, I had graduated since then to FM. So I was listening to LIR, and I was listening to NEW. So they played a lot of that stuff. So, it, you know, it was cool. But he was impressed by that. He was so impressed that they went to the station manager and got me an air shift.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I got on the air and wasn't allowed to touch the board or anything like that. And then, you know, of course, one day the engineer didn't show up.
Oh, right. And then what happened?
So I went around to the other side of the glass and I said, okay, I'm gonna figure out how this works, you know? And so I knew how to turn the mic on, so that was easy. And I thought, well, it's two turntables, so I didn't know, you know, about mixing or anything. I just thought you just put the record, because that's what I was doing with my mom. Just putting the needle on the record.
Right. So I thought that's so cool.
I thought that's how they
did it. So when you started doing that, because obviously what I'm getting is you must have had a lot of self-esteem issues, as anybody would growing up with a dad like that, right?
Oh, yeah. Radio is a great place to hide out, too. I could still do that thing that I loved, but nobody would see me.
Yeah, you didn't have the pressure of being examined
or
commented on.
Right.
But so did that help your self-esteem? Did that give you an identity?
It helped a little bit, but then I got a break. LIRWLIR was looking for interns.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that to get an internship at LIR, which basically was answering the phones.
Uh-huh.
And So I thought it was cool because now I'm like, wow, I'm in a real radio station now, you know? That was kind of my thing. And I thought, well, how can I get off of these phones and get somewhere else? Like get in the DJ booth, like get behind the mic. How can I do that? Because I didn't know what the protocol was. And the same thing happened again. One of the DJs came in early. His name was Ray White. Still friends with him to this day.
And nice.
Yes. And he came in and had the stack of records. And was going through them. So I did my guess what you're going to play again.
Wow.
Yeah. And he
that's a real talent. That's not that's not something you can just learn.
It was just kind of like, I think just something that was already there. So I ended up, in the music library, and then I got a couple of fill-in shifts here and there. And then I got caught up in company politics and I got fired.
That sounds very common.
Yeah. So I was off of I didn't do radio for a while and zipped into Manhattan again and worked at a record store on 8th Street called Record Factory.
In the 70s or 80s?
Yeah, we're in the late 70s going into the 80s.
Oh, that must have been awesome. What was that like?
Oh, it was fun. I mean, we were down the block from Electric Lady Studios. That's all I
can
remember.
Yeah, Electric Ladyland, where Jimi Hendrix did his album, right?
I would just go there every day and just for my lunch break and just stand in front of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. That was like its heyday. I'm sure the Beatles had all been in there.
I think everybody
had been there. Every great musician.
And you would just watch people run in and out all day long.
Did you see people like, did you meet musicians coming into the store? I imagine you did.
Yeah, I met a lot. I made out with Marianne Faithfull.
Get the fuck
true
out.
Story. True story.
You get the
made
fuck
out.
Out.
Made out with
you
Marianne Faithfull.
Spit with Marianne Faithfull. Swapped
spit, tongue to tongue.
How did that happen?
I was working at a record factory. She came in one day, and she was looking for records, and she said, she goes, oh my God, I don't have any money on me. Have you got any money? And I was like,
did you recognize who she was?
Oh, yeah. As soon as I knew who she was. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She must have had like charisma just bouncing out.
She
of
just
her,
has
right?
that thing. She's one of those people that she walks in and you feel her walk in.
What happened? So she had no money.
She had no money. She goes, does anybody call? Isn't there an artist discount or everything? And I'm thinking, if there ain't one, I'm going to make one right now. You know, I would did anything she said. And she looked in her purse. She goes, oh, you know what? I'm $5 short. And I gave her my last $5.
Oh, my God.
And she was like,
good move, though.
Oh, yeah. And she goes, oh, that's so lovely. And then she kissed me, but she kept going. The next thing I know, her tongue is in my mouth.
Oh, my God. Were people looking?
Everybody was looking. Customers and staff. And she goes, oh, I'll get this back. I said, you don't have to. You just paid me back. You don't have to give me. Because
wow.
We're doing a show down at the garden tonight, and you're lucky. You're welcome to come. Just come to the back door and ask for me, and I'll come out and get you.
So did you?
Well, first I had to go. I had to deal with the people that worked in the store. They were like, oh, my God, Bill. Do you know where that mouth has been? And I said, you know what?
I said,
I am honored to be where that mouth has been.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
I said, you know where? I said, we're talking about the royalty of the music business, of rock and roll. I'm happy to say that I'm part of that little legacy now, you know? So I did. I went to the garden. I knocked on the back door. And while I was knocking on the back door, I suddenly realized that she never asked me what my name was. So I'm standing there for a minute and the concert's going on, and then I realize the concert's going on. Ain't nobody back here. So nobody was coming out to get me. So
you went, but everybody was
they were on stage. You know?
Wow.
So I went home.
So what happened?
Yeah, I left and I went back downtown and drank myself into a stupor.
Oh, that sounds like, well, it's still you had a pretty big experience.
I thought nobody.
So we're gonna run out of time. Oh, I wanted to talk to you about your paintings, but like we're gonna run out of time. So let's just quickly get to that. So
okay.
You have a lot of work. Mm. A lot of paintings. I see that. I mean, we started talking about it in the studio, but I know people go to your Facebook page. They can see a lot of your work.
Yes.
So tell us about like what's going on with your painting now, like because it seems like something that's a really big factor in your life.
Yeah, it's really kind of the factor, actually. You know, right after radio. You know, it's the thing. It's a something that I did as a kid, and then I stopped because, you know, somebody made fun of me or gave me a hard time, and I didn't do it for a long, long, long time. And then I got back into it for a little bit, and I thought, you know, I'm not really into this, da-da-da. And it made me sad because I really enjoyed doing it, but it made me sad for a little while that I just didn't seem to want to do it. And then about 5-6 years ago, a friend of mine who is an artist was having a block. She couldn't do mm-hmm. anything. And I'd read in a book someplace about an exercise for people with creative blocks. So I said, this is what we're going to do. You and I are going to do a painting a day for the next 30 days, right? And it's not about anybody seeing it or judging it or anything. We're just going to get back into the flow of painting, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And I said, but there's a catch to it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you have to post it.
Oh.
Because, you know.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, I said, because it'd be real easy to go, hey, yeah, I did the work. I said, so.
I know.
Now you got to put it out there. And good, bad, or indifferent, doesn't matter. Even if you take a big magic marker and put a big red X on a piece of paper, you do that and post it. So, but when I made a painting on this little piece of cardboard, I felt so good. I mean, my body was tingling.
Oh.
And I just thought, oh my God.
And did your friend keep up with it?
She stopped after about 15, but I kept going.
Really? So do you do a painting every day?
Just about.
And post it?
Just about, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that's impressive. So you have like a little studio set up at home?
No, I am technically homeless.
Really?
Yeah.
How does one have two radio stations and also be homeless and a painter?
It's weird. It's weird. I mean, I was one of the things I was doing a lot was cat sitting. I sit for a lot of cats.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. So I end up being at people's homes for like 2 weeks, a week, 10 days, mm-hmm. 3 days. So mm-hmm. I do that a lot. And so far I've been lucky where there hasn't been really any gaps, you mm-hmm. know? And when I have those gaps, I've been been staying at the ex-wife, which is I do not suggest for anyone to do.
Okay, well, you have a backup plan.
Yeah, but it's not. Well, it ended recently, so the ex-wife was like, you know, time to move on, you know. So that's what I'm doing. So it's kind of like that. That's my life. My life is the only thing that I need is a space that's mine.
So in other words, maybe the painting is a way for you to keep some like consistency in your life, right?
Yeah, it makes me happy. We're doing that and doing the radio show makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Have you studied painting or art? Or
No.
I mean, it sounds like you did it as a child, like you've always been inclined to that.
Yeah, but like
that way, right?
I would like try to duplicate what I saw in comic books and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or
I did that too.
Yeah.
Except mine were Betty and Veronica.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember them. I had such a crush on Veronica.
Oh, I hate Veronica.
I know because you know how I had a crush on her, because I knew if she was real, I would have no shot. Well, you know, that's
like the girls
that they can't have,
girls that aren't available,
right? I don't know what that's about, but there's something behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's an intimacy issue there.
Yeah, probably.
But you know what, Billy, at our age, we're too old to fix that.
Yeah, I can't do nothing about that now. And so I was trying to explain that to somebody the other day. She goes, you should be over that by now. I go, nope.
No,
I can't do nothing about it.
So what are the paintings to you? Are they like just a pure feeling of emotion, or
they're mostly emotion, but what usually spurs them is either an idea about something, like something I saw, something I thought, or something somebody said. But most of them are usually egged on by some piece of music I heard.
Interesting.
Yeah, like sometimes we sit down and listening to a Miles Davis record and it would just spur me to paint, you know. And I would start painting and just put the headphones on and turn them up, or I'd be listening to, you know, an audio book or something, and somebody would say something. But it seems like I think years of avoiding any kind of stimulus, and now just being open to all stimulus, so almost anything kind of gets me wanting to do it. You know?
So there's a certain hunger in there.
That's what I think it is.
What do you mean that you avoided stimulus?
Well, you know, like I didn't want to react to anything that was going on around me. So I missed everything. So if somebody was looking
at... You mean because of your upbringing with your dad and everything?
Yeah, so I was just...
So you were afraid to show anything.
I was afraid to show any kind of anything to anybody about anything, because the thing was I thought what would happen was that this person would just hurt me, you know?
Mm-hmm, right.
So I didn't want to get hurt. So I thought if I just keep to myself and not say anything to anybody, you know, then I can't get hurt, you know?
So it sounds like the desire to paint sort of came with some, let's say, healing, growth, desire to get out of that
place. I would say that. And I think also the desire to express myself. You know, and I think that's what the radio show does as well. It's I can say things through the music that I might not be able to put into words, but I can put the music together, and the music can say it. You know.
Mm-hmm. So, how does it feel now when you get reactions to your paintings, like putting them out there? Or what's that feel like?
It's you know, it's really interesting because I know that the person that looking at the painting has no idea about how it came about or why it's like it is.
It's abstract.
Yeah.
They're abstract paintings.
Yeah. And, but it's interesting listening to what they see in it. Like how other people see things, you know, cause that, you know what
so
I mean?
You're actually learning about yourself maybe from how other people respond.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And then that in turn inspires me to paint more.
Wow.
You know, because
that's so cool. What kind of things have stuck in your head that you've gotten from other people?
Oh, when somebody goes, oh man, you know, I can see like a lion in there. Is that a lion? And I go, wow, you know, when I did that, it wasn't even on my mind. What was on my mind when I did, let's say, that particular painting was, you know, was Soul Sacrifice by Santana. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, that's so funny.
You know, so it's kind of like, it's interesting. So then, you know, you have more ideas of things. You might go, oh, I wonder what it would be like to paint a lion, you know? And then,
oh, wow.
And then you go and do that. And then it comes out, maybe not necessarily a lion, but it comes out with something from whatever's inside of you, you know?
From that sensibility.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're having a way of communicating in a certain way that's at a different, like kind of on an instinctual level, yeah, or an emotional gut level with other people through your work.
I would definitely say emotional, definitely.
Yeah, so that's probably a lot of the rewarding. So if it wasn't for, say, quote-unquote social media, do you think this would be, you know, I mean, of course you could always hang your work up anywhere, but, you know, it's also really hard as a visual artist to get feedback on your work sometimes because you're not there when people are looking at it necessarily.
Right.
So, you know, if it's hanging in a building or somewhere not in your home, you know, you never know who's
You never know, that's right.
So do you think that social media has changed your relationship with your work?
I truly believe it, because it's like, you know, if you want to get automatic feedback, you can get it, you know, just by putting stuff out someplace, because somebody will say something.
So that's part of your motivation, or what you find satisfying, is that you're able to communicate with people more directly through your work because of social media.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part
of
it.
It's not all like the kind of artist that makes a painting, hangs it in a gallery and expects people to come see it. Like, you are communicating directly through your work in the combination of mediums that are available to you.
Yeah. It's kind of like,
it's pretty good. You art people, did you get that? You art people listening? That is really, really good. I haven't really thought about art painting that way, and having people, because most artists complain that people look at their work online and they're not really getting the full, you know, beauty of it or the full experience of it.
Right.
But you're not an egomaniac about that, and you're actually being rewarded for it, which I love. So you know what? We only have 2 minutes left, Billy.
Okay.
Billy?
Yes.
So I think we need to like wrap this up. I think we should give, what do you think?
Yeah.
Two minutes.
Yeah, we have.
I think we covered a lot, though. I feel like I know you a lot better.
I feel a lot better, actually.
I mean, it's really interesting. You know what, Billy? You're definitely an interesting guy. We filled that whole hour with, like, you fucking got to make out with,
you know, Marianne
does everybody
Faithful.
At the station know that you got to make out with Marianne Faithful?
I'm not sure if I mentioned it at one of the meetings, you know, when
does Tom know about that?
I don't know. That's interesting.
Okay, we're going to have to definitely get this out there, that you made out with Marianne Faithful. I think it's going to really help your show. But let's make sure that everybody sticks around and listens to Elon Danziger's show, Lost and Rewound.
Lost and Rewound. That's next. Coming up next.
That's next. It's up next. He's great, right?
Yes, and, he is.
Let's make sure that we have to tell everybody that they were listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And thank you so much for listening, folks.
Thanks, folks.
Stick around for Elon and come back every Thursday, 2 to 3, to listen to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and rebroadcast on Friday at 8 to 9 a.m.
Oh, awesome.
And tune into Billy's show, too. Billy, say your shows.
That's right. Attitude Adjustment Hour, Thursday mornings at 11, and Cosmic Debris, Sunday night at 11. Right here.
So stick around. Yeah, make sure you listen to Billy's stuff. And-